Welcome to episode 58 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name's Tama Frank. In last week's episode, in case you missed it, we talked to Dennis Malachek, who is the CEO and president of an electronic equipment manufacturer called Dynatronics. And we discussed how he transformed his, as he put it, old school manufacturing facility to a results-only work environment and the impact that has had. There seems to be a fair bit of interest in that one, so if you missed it, you might want to go back and check it out. You can get it directly on the website at frankreactions.com/57, or of course in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. I also, in this past week, put out my annual list of customer experience quotes and thoughts from the previous year's worth of podcast guests. You can find that either by going to the website again, or on LinkedIn, or on SlideShare. And at the end of that slide presentation, as a little bonus, I guess, I put together a customer experience early warning system audit checklist. And you can get a free copy of that by going to bit.ly/EWS audit, as in early warning system audit. So wander on over and have a look at that. Now to today's episode. You probably noticed that in the introduction to this show, I talk about it being the show where we help you profit from the digital era, but profit isn't always financial. Today, I talk to Matthew Duva, who is the executive director of the International Association for the Study of Pain and a longtime president and CEO of SOCAP, which is the Society of Consumer Affairs Professionals, and basically a place where customer experience people from really big companies hang out and chat. In our interview, we discuss some of the similarities and differences between associations and private sector companies when it comes to customer experience. And we also talk about a few of the things that each side can learn from the other. Enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you briefly at the end.
I'm Matthew Duva. And I am currently the executive director of the International Association for the Study of Pain. My members are pain researchers and clinicians who focus on all aspects of pain, and my members are global. So we have about a third of our members in North America, which obviously includes both the United States and Canada. We have a third of our members across Europe, and then a third of our members are in other parts of the world. That is what I'm currently doing now. I spent about 9 years as the president and CEO of SOCAP International, which is a society of consumer affairs professionals, customer care executives from large Fortune 1000 companies representing multiple industries. And I see myself as an association professional. I have about 20 years of experience in associations.
I was really intrigued about your background because associations obviously have sometimes different objectives from companies. And a lot of the stuff we read about customer experience is really company focused. So I'm curious about, from what you've seen in your years working with associations, how does member experience differ from customer experience?
I feel as though there are obviously lots of similarities. I think what makes associations a bit unique is that there is association members are more tied to their organization. They, I think, inherently have a stronger relationship in some ways than a customer has with a company. Really, membership-based organizations, members are a part of the governance structure. They are, in fact, stakeholders in their organization. I, as the executive director of my current organization, and when I, in any role that I've been in the leadership role, we work at the pleasure of the board, which are comprised of members, who are essentially our customers. So, you know, I think in some ways associations have always been in the experience business. I mean, we are, as association professionals, we are, We're very tied to the needs of our members, and our members actually direct and create the vision and the structure for the organization. So I think that in some ways we provide a very interesting roadmap for companies that are interested in customer experience and how to build those really meaningful relationships, because we've been doing it for 100 years or more, frankly. But I think the relationships that companies are building now are in fact more similar. And there are many, I think, examples of how those are happening. Everything from companies that have sort of similar to what we have in membership models, having subscription models where for a service you can pay monthly and it's sort of take advantage of all the benefits of being related to those companies. I mean, those are very similar to membership models that we've had in associations forever.
Good point.
So yes. I think there's lots of similarities there. And obviously, I think the relationship building. So we build relationships because our members help create content for us. They are actually participating in the governance of the organization. And I think companies are trying to do similar things with their own organizations. I mean, they are looking for customers to help provide impact and feedback in terms of product development or offering feedback in terms of what their experience with the product is, which is similar to what I think we've been doing as in associations for a long time as well.
Yeah, I guess associations, if you're not serving your members, they don't stay as members.
Well, that's true. But I think the other thing that's a little bit different is that's where I think we're very similar to the corporate structure. But I also think that if we're not serving our members are the people that make decisions about what the organization is actually doing. So it's our board of directors who are our members who decide what as associations we should be focused on. So it's even more direct than that.
Although it's interesting because I've done a lot of volunteer work with various organizations, and I don't know if this has been something you've seen in any of the organizations you've been with, but there's often some resentment when you look at the chapters that are where the head office is and chapters in the regions, feeling that the regional ones feeling that their needs aren't being met. Have you seen good ways that any organizations have handled that or dealt with that?
I think that there are always challenges in ensuring that you're serving all of your members and your member needs. And in associations and in nonprofits, there's a variety of different ways in which you are evaluated, whether it's how you're serving members geographically by region, how you might be serving members by particular disciplines. And that feedback and that, and those concerns, I think, are part of what healthy organizations need to have in order to grow and be better. I think the most successful organizations are one where there is a high level of transparency between what's happening in the governance structure at the board of directors level, at the national or the global office level, and that there's a clear feedback channel for members and members from diverse locations and members in diverse disciplines, or however members are broken up, to be able to feel as though they're heard by their leadership and that their needs are being at least addressed. Now, certainly.
So what can I just interrupt? What are some of the best practices you've seen in terms of making those channels of communication truly be open instead of just theoretically?
I think, like the corporate environment, you know, like we're seeing in corporate America, you know, I think there are, it's the tool we have, many organizations have tools available to be able to provide members with an opportunity to voice their concerns and to be heard. So whether it's using social media tools like you do in work engaging with brands that you love. Associations have those tools. A lot of associations also have their own sort of private channels, their own private listservs or discussion boards or platforms that allow members to be able to engage in dialogue and engage in the process. So whether it's processes to change bylaws, whether it's processes to offer feedback on on governance changes or on changes related to particular political stances that their organizations are taking, or whether it's new products and services. And I think organizations that do well go back to transparency. So being able to make sure that members feel like that there are proper vehicles for them to express their thoughts, ideas, and concerns, that there are opportunities for members to volunteer to be part of solutions, and that there are opportunities for them to be a part of the leadership. So organizations where there's a clear path to leadership, where there's investment in leadership development programs, where there are those feedback channels that are responded to in an open and transparent way. Those are organizations that I think have success with their members. And I think that's something that I have strived for in my career as an association executive. And I know many of my colleagues do as well.
Do you think it's important for associations to do an annual membership survey on those issues?
I think dialogue is really important. And I think that, I think that organizations need to do what is in the best interest of their members. And I'm not trying to be a cop. That's not trying to be a cop out answer. But I think that, you know, for a long time, the annual membership survey was the way in which associations were able to collect data. Yeah. I think in the world that we live in today, there are lots of ways for organizations to collect data. They can collect them through chapters. They can collect it through chapter leadership. They can collect it through social media. They can get it to collect through engagement at association meetings, through association programs. And I think that all of those are viable ways to be able to collect feedback from members. I think at the end of the day, though, what members really want is to see that feedback is being listened to and that associations are reacting to feedback. So just doing an annual survey is certainly valuable, but if nothing's being done with that information, it's pretty useless. And so I think any opportunity that associations can utilize to get feedback from members and then act upon it is what members are looking for and expect.
Yeah, I think you've got a really good point there that there are a bunch of other tools, although I suspect there's still, even if you analyze who's active on your social media, you may well, on your private chat groups or whatever, you may well find or be able to interpret that there's a lack of connection with certain chapters because they never actually do participate in those things. So maybe that gives you a hint that something's worth exploring.
I think that's true. But I also think that one of the benefits of sort of this, yes, please type, you know, not making choices is you're able to collect information from a more diverse audience. So there are some members for whom they just won't sit down and give you, they won't take the time to fill out a survey, but they will engage with you on social media, or they will offer unsolicited feedback via social media. I think that all of those ways to collect data are really valuable and need to be analyzed, you know, in terms of the kinds of data that they are. It's obviously if you've got statistically valid data versus anecdotal data and
sure.
I mean structured data, unstructured data, you need to look at all of that. But I think that at the end of the day for associations and really for any organization that's looking to be responsive, you want to get as much diverse data as you can, and I think that is critical. Associations also, when you talked about chapters and affiliate groups, there are numerous ways to be able to connect with chapter leaders and to get more in-depth data versus then a quick survey.
Yeah, okay. Who within, and I guess this would really vary with the type of association and the size of association, but does an association need to have somebody on staff who is explicitly tasked with judging the voice of the member, with looking for that type of feedback and interpreting it, instead of just responding one-off?
So I would say that, yes, that answer, it will vary by size of organization in terms of how you dedicate resources to analyzing the voice of the member. Because I think most members of the staff of an organization have the ability to interact and are interacting with members on a daily basis. The question is how do you create a mechanism to be able to analyze the data in aggregate and to be able to make larger strategic decisions for your organization? So
that's my question to you.
Right.
How do you?
Well, and I think that's a challenge because I lived in sort of both worlds. I saw how, you know, the resources that large companies were putting into this effort, and I see the challenges that smaller associations with less resources, you know, have to that effort. And frankly, the challenges that associations have in terms of the kinds of technology that we have access to versus what large companies have. One of the benefits I think that associations have, which I've expressed earlier, is I think we have systems by which we can collect more data more often. So we have lots of opportunities where we're touching members. They tend to feel a bit of a stronger tie to us in some instances. So we do get a lot of data that comes in. But I think that more and more associations are looking at what's happening in the private sector and are, you know, recognizing that that we need to stay competitive and are investing more into those resources. Like corporate America, we all see that building customized experiences is going to be critical to be successful in the future.
Well, and it's interesting because it's similar to B2C, business to consumer markets, and the expectations being set there are so high that we've seen that brush off as well in how people are, what they expect with associations, and I've seen it in what they expect in the B2B market with businesses.
I think that's really critical. I think that there used to be a time where consumers would look at the relationship with another entity, whether it was a company, whether it was an association, and had different expectations based on what they perceived to be fair for that industry. So whether it was, you know, what they would expect, the kind of service they could expect from a nonprofit versus experience response that they could expect from a large company, and a large company who was in the automotive industry versus in the retail industry or the travel industry. And I think that more and more consumers are looking at their last great customer experience and they're applying that to their next experience. And you are being measured based on the best experience that they've had and the expectation that every experience should be that of that quality. And I think that that is a real challenge for associations that don't have the resources to be able to deliver on those, to be able to deliver for our members and be able to offer the kinds of service and support that they are receiving from the large companies.
That's a really good point, and you sparked a research idea in my mind, because back in 2001, I started a website usability testing company, but we were doing omni-channel testing. So one of the things that we did is our testers would actually call customer service with a question to do with the website. And I didn't ask for objectively how long were they on hold. I asked, how reasonable do you think the length of time on hold was? And found quite clearly from the research that, for instance, with banks and government, they expected they'd be on hold a little longer than they would expect from small companies, let's say. It would be really interesting to repeat that now and see if they, I think you may well be right, that they've grown much less willing to accept any delay.
A customer might still say, I recognize that if I call, if I make a phone call, then I may have to wait a bit to get somebody to answer my questions. But I would wonder if that tolerance for how long an appropriate wait time, how much that differs now. I think people, there's sort of an understanding. I'm willing to wait, but I'm not willing to wait longer.
20 minutes.
Right. And I'm not willing to wait longer because of a different industry. And I think associations, have to be competitive in that way as well.
So, apart from simply lack of resources, what do you see as being the things that the associations struggle with most when it comes to member experience?
I think one of the challenges for associations is that it's a challenge, and the opportunity for associations is the fact that we essentially we're member driven. And so, in a business, you sometimes make decisions that are going to maximize your profitability. Certainly in an association, we're looking to serve, as many people as possible, and we're looking at efficiencies and value. But we also need to weigh the diverse opinions of our members and be more responsive to that wide variety of needs of our members. So, we work with a board of directors, many of our boards of directors, some organizations have very large boards of directors, and you've got that diverse thought. So you want to create, and organizations create a keen strategic plan, but I think there's a bit more gray areas in an association than you might find in a for-profit company.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any examples you can give us of associations that have done a particularly great job on customer experience, or who've done something that's a little novel or unique?
I think associations, one of the things that are very unique about us is that there are things that we know to be true that in the corporate space, some for-profit organizations are still somewhat reluctant to embrace. For example, I think in social media, one of the things that's, I think, becoming more and more prevalent and understood in the for-profit space is when you have people engaging in social media, let the community work out problems. In the for-profit world, I think there is there can be some hesitation when an individual consumer is talking negatively about your brand and sort of this desire to jump into that conversation and to not let the community jump in and sort of defend you. And I think in the association world, that is much more common, and that is much more kind of what we do, is you let the community kind of hash out the issues that are important. And I think that's something that I think we do particularly well as a community, because and inherently there is no authority. I mean, it's a bit more diffused leadership. We've made great strides in making sure that our members are heard. So whether it's through social media, but also in the development of products and services, it's really our members that are really creating content that we are then putting out in the marketplace. And so one of the things that I think is really interesting for associations is, and particularly as you're seeing the Consumer Electronics Show, is I think associations are also trying to utilize technology better and to create meaningful experiences in places where it's traditionally been more difficult to create community. So the larger your trade show, the larger your conference, the more challenging it is to create meaningful and personalized experiences. And I think what I've seen that's been really interesting and exciting, and we've been trying to implement here at my current organization, is using technology to create those experiences, to create customized one-on-one experiences, so that if you're in a large conference with 6,000, 7,000, 10,000 people, 20,000 people, you can still have an experience that is customized for you. And I think
Can you give an example of what you mean by that?
Well, I think whether it's using things like, mobile applications or beacons within trade shows to be able to find vendors that are really unique to you, whether it's using, again, mobile apps to find sessions that will relate to you, whether it's being able to connect with people and sharing information about what you're looking for in terms of the kinds of people that you want to network with, and being able to connect with those people in real time at a show. I think those are really important for people because time is very valuable. So it's not only the registration that they're spending to get to a meeting and the time away from family and the time away from their businesses, and then they want to make those conference experiences much more meaningful. And I think that's something that associations are investing a lot of time and energy into figuring out how to do that.
That's a really good example. Do you find that member participation rates are increasing because there are so many more ways to do it now? Or is it just that the same number of people are just active in more ways?
I think member participation is a real challenge for a lot of associations. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think there are a lot of different ways that people can spend their time. And so people are being pulled in a lot of different directions. I think there was a time where associations were the obvious place where people would contribute their time and talents. And I think now there are lots of, that's the whole basis of this discussion today, is there's lots of organizations, companies, entities that are looking to engage with their customers and so people have so many choices and so many ways that they can contribute. So it's always a challenge to figure out how to get them to spend time with you and get them to spend their energy with you. Creating meaningful experiences that are meaningful and valuable to diverse audiences, diverse generations is certainly, I think, a challenge for associations because we want to engage all of our members, but the way that members want to engage may not always be the same. So you've got to create experiences that allow members to contribute in ways that they will find value in, but also will advance the work of the organization too. And sometimes that's a bit of a tricky thing to be able to do.
Hope you enjoyed that interview. If you work for an association, I'd love to hear what sorts of challenges and issues you're facing. Feel free to send me an email at Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com. Love to hear your thoughts, your questions, and have a little chat with you about it. I've been, as I say in the interview, on a lot of nonprofit boards and involved in a lot of volunteer associations. So associations are something near and dear to my heart, and I love working with associations. Also, remember to go pick up your copy of the Customer Experience Early Warning System Audit at bit.ly/EWS audit. And also, of course, over at frankreactions.com, you can download transcripts to any of the episodes of the podcast. Usually there's about a 1-day delay between when a new issue goes up and when you can get the transcript. But wander on over, do that. And also, those of you who've been listening regularly know that I've been slaving away over my new book, People Shock. Not ready to come out yet. Now well into the editing process. Hope to have it out by late spring. But if you're interested in being on the early notifications list for when it is coming out, just send me an email with the subject line Early Bird, and I'll make sure you get on that list. Or just sign up for the Frank Ideas newsletter, which you can do anywhere at my website, frankreactions.com. I will make sure that all our newsletter subscribers get early notification of when the book is about to come out. So that's all I've got for you today. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will chat with you again next week. Bye.